Freedom Fiends, broadcasting from Pod Bay 2A, a mile above sea level, at Intergalactic Prairie Studios. We alter your locus coeruleus by warming your synapses with rejuvenative radio waves. This warms your brain to a tasty and toasty 365 degrees Fahrenheit to keep a sin flood of statism out of your head. Can you feel it, Davi? Is it working? Can you feel it?
I sure can.
The Freedom Fiends is covered by a BIPCOT no government license. This allows reuse by anyone except government. Learn more at BIPCOT.org.
Hey, Davi, you're the one that's feeding back. You got to turn down your headphones and tighten them. Clamp those things on your headphones. This is Mr. Michael Dean, and I'm feeling it. It is an effort to talk. I'm more than a mile above sea level tonight. I'm 2,700 feet above sea level in the death zone on Mount Everest, and I'm suffering for my art. Now it's your turn. I'm getting off prednisone, if you want to search that. Not pregnant zone. It's prednisone. Search prednisone withdrawal. Actually, Davi, what did you search and what did it autofill? No, that was corpses, right?
I was searching the internet for corpses.
And what did it autofill?
There is apparently a sin flood of dead bodies on top of Mount Everest.
Yeah.
Yeah. Actually, Corpse Bride was the first autofill that my browser came up with. I don't know what's up with that, but
do you think that Google is so smart and intrusive that it's like giving Davi autofill based on what I've been searching because we're friends? That'd be creepy.
That would be creepy. Either that or it's tapped my brain and Google just knows.
It's in your head. That's what Windows 10 is like that too. Like Windows 10 is giving me alerts, news alerts, whenever a cop shoots somebody. Like, and I haven't told it to do that. It just thinks I'm curious about that.
It's become self-aware.
It has. They have. So I've been fascinated the past 3 days. Like, I can't stop reading about Google this, people. Google on Google Images, Rainbow Valley. It sounds like a wonderful place to be, doesn't it? Davi, Google Rainbow Valley and tell me what comes up and why it's called that.
I'm on it. Rainbow Valley, a book by Lucy Maud Montgomery. Is this what you're talking about?
No, I'm talking about the
images.
Yeah, images. I'm talking about the very upper level of Mount Everest where there are about 200 corpses in plain view that you have to pass on the way to the top. And it's called Rainbow Valley because they're all wearing, you know, they're like colorful mountaineering puffy jackets and pants and boots. And they don't deteriorate. Okay. They just mummify up there because it's so cold and dry.
See, in my head, when you said Mount Everest, I was thinking Mount Rushmore. And I was thinking, like, why would there be a pile of bodies, like, preserved up on Mount Rushmore?
To celebrate America's history.
It must be because Thomas there's nothing slave harem, right?
Because like, there's nothing as... Well, wasn't it you who said there's nothing as American as a pile of dead bodies? No, there's nothing as like, statist as a pile of dead bodies. You said that was the ultimate in statism. Was that you
I don't
or
think
Lou?
I said that, but that sounds like me. So I'll, yeah. No, it's probably Lou. But yeah, Everest makes some sense. People can't even get up there. But
yeah. Well, the thing is, it's the highest mountain in the world, so everyone wants to climb it. But it's by far not the hardest mountain to climb. Like K2 is way harder. There's a lot of Annapurna. There's a lot of ones that are a lot harder. And actually, Everest, like, basically, I could not climb it, but you guys could climb it if you had $100,000. Basically, Davi, turn down your headphones. I'm still getting echo. Or board op, turn down your speaker. Basically, if you pay $60,000 to $100,000, you can get Sherpas to, like, winch you up to the top almost. I mean, they go up and they put up ladders and ropes and they bring you oxygen. That's one reason I'm fascinated with it, too, is because, like, I'm on supplemental oxygen, and most people have to use supplemental oxygen to get to the top. But it's, like, become such an industry. It's only, like, a month and a half you can climb it when the weather's good enough. People climb it. It takes weeks to climb it. You have to acclimate on the way up, and about 2% of the people that go up there die. You know, so there's, like, 200 dead bodies on the way up. It's too high to bring a helicopter up. Like, there's not enough oxygen for a helicopter to work. And people have died trying to bring the bodies down. So the mountain is actually covered with dead bodies, empty oxygen bottles, and human feces.
I don't like that.
It's like CEOs pay $100,000 to be able to say Gary Johnson has climbed Mount Everest.
So here's the capitalist in me that this is how the market would solve this problem. So these are preserved bodies, which means at some point the market value of internal organs will be such that it becomes viable up there.
You know what? They had good lungs, man.
Or maybe they weren't good enough.
What's the cause of death?
If you can get to base camp on Mount Rushmore, you've got better lungs than I would take them.
So, I mean, I think this is probably the best cryogenic freezing that they've done so far. Someday somebody's going to go up there. It's a ready-made zombie horde.
Oh, Davi, I think that should be your next book.
The zombies. They're sort of like freeze-dried, right? Like freeze-dried.
Yeah, yeah. Obviously.
Like human jerky. They're like turned into
pictures,
beef jerky.
James?
I'm looking at pictures.
Search Rainbow Valley. Rainbow Valley sounds like such a nice place, doesn't it? It doesn't really sound like a place that would be littered with mummified corpses, recently mummified corpses.
Well, here's Rainbow my problem Valley. With this. It's that, you know, I do a lot of hiking, okay? But my philosophy is, you know, pack in, pack out. I bring out everything I take in, okay? Can't these hikers do the same thing?
You need too much. I mean, it's like a 6-week trek to the top. Like, you need too much to bring it all down. They're actually, Nepal is starting to fine people who don't bring down, like, 18 kilograms of poo or something like that. But,
that's the forest.
The rich guys just pay it.
The Forest Service's slogan is take only photographs, leave only corpses, right? Like, isn't that? Yeah.
Okay, that's
the U.S. Park Service.
That's the name of the episode. That's what I'm good at. That's why I'm making the virtual box. You guys just ramble, and I know the phrase that is the episode title. Say it again. Take only photographs.
Take only photographs, leave only corpses.
Okay, there we go.
It should be the title of the book about the zombies of Mount Everest.
There you go. I'm serious, Davi. I think you should do it. Although I think someone has written some fiction about something. You should research this before you do it.
There's zombie Nazis, and they're like the Nazi brigades that marched into Russia and froze to death. And then they become zombies in the modern era. Yeah, I know. I just mean the idea of cryogenically frozen zombie hordes is a thing.
The Alps were all climbed like 100 years before Everest. Everest was climbed in the 50s. But, yeah, man. And the thing is, like, it's so busy getting up there now that, like, you get to the top and you get to be on the top for, like, 5 minutes. And then people yell at you because they want to get up there. Like, there's room for, like, 3 people up there. Google top of Mount Everest. It's covered with prayer flags. Now, this is something I think you should make, Davi, as merch. It's like little foot by half foot block printed prayer flags. They're pretty cool. Like Nepalese and Buddhist prayer flags.
Oh, weird. Yeah, they look like those like Tibetan or whatever.
James, how high is that picture of you and your daughter that you sent with the big rock? And where is that?
Oh, how high is that? I don't know. That's maybe like 800 feet up. And
that's not mountaineering. That's hiking.
Yeah, that's hiking.
That's
however,
like Twin Peaks in San Francisco.
The day we loosen that boulder, and of course this is visual humor. It's a giant boulder on the edge of a cliff that was left by a glacier.
Yeah.
So, and it's very precariously positioned right on the edge, and it could roll down, it could take out a tourist bus, it could do a lot of damage. So every year we work it. We get a little closer to getting that thing over the edge, and one day we'll get it.
Worms.
Destroying national parks. You know, it's something that we try to do.
Is it really destroying if it's public property?
Davi's still feeding back.
I don't know what to do here. I've turned my headphone down. I've turned GCN
down. Davi, I think you should have... Oh, people take the same steroid I'm getting off of to get up Mount Everest. They take pregnant, like, they're not anabolic steroids, the ones that build your muscles up. They're corticoid steroids, the ones that give you more lung power. And getting off the meds gives you, like, diminished lung power, which is why I sound like I'm dying. But, yeah, so they use oxygen and, like, some people don't use oxygen. They're like, I'm manly, I don't need the oxygen, but they'll take the steroids. So, yeah, man.
Weird.
Everest. So, and they also take the Sherpas, right? Like, yeah, if you don't take, you know, I have a lot of respect for those that don't take 100 Sherpas with them to do that hike.
Yeah. You know, my my childhood girlfriend, Denise De La Serta, who is still friends of mine and did one of my tattoos, married a Sherpa. And this is something I found out. Most Sherpas' last name is Sherpa because the people in that culture only have one name. They have a first name, but the government does a census and has to give them two names. So they give them Sherpa as their last. Like,
that's where a lot of the last names came from, isn't it? Like, but it's Smith is a Smith.
But it's recent, you know? Davi Zombier, yeah. So
Michael Fien.
Yeah. Well, there you go. So give me a little more feedback on this corpse problem, this corpse situation, before we go in a couple minutes here, because I'm not coming back. I'm going to go look at corpse pictures.
The other possibility is that someone is stranded up on Mount Everest and there's plenty of food around.
Yeah, that's a good point. I think you should go to the top of Mount Everest, plant a Bipcot flag, and do a Bitcoin transaction. I think you should get someone to finance you to do that, James.
Not sure there's great signal up there. But
there actually is. They've actually worked it out, so there is. It's a tourist. It's like Six Flags, man. It is the Six Flags of mountaineering.
That's not cool.
There's pictures of like 100 people going up the same track at the same time on there.
Right, and well, these boots are used as navigation tools, right? Like,
turn right at Green Boots. Green Boots is the halfway point, which is weird because most of the bodies are much higher than that. He pushed out. Actually, I think he died on the way down. Some people summit and then die on the way down. And there's actually a controversy. There's one guy that like was dying and like 30 people went by him and said hi to him while he was dying and knew he was dying and like didn't stop to help him. Because really, you can't stop and help people. Like, you will die if you stop and help people. And everyone that does it knows the risk, and he didn't bring oxygen, and he didn't bring steroids, and he didn't bring a Sherpa, and yeah. Yeah, we're out.
Worms.
Take nothing but pictures, leave nothing but corpses. All right.
Sounds like a life motto.
You're listening to Freedom Fiends with Michael Dean and some of his weird friends. And yes, we're broadcasting this into space.
Broadcasting from the Death Zone of Everest. The Death Zone is at the top, like, you know, like 25,000 to 27,000 feet. The top part of Everest. It's like literally, you'll die up there. Like, people will die. They can't be up there very long. Like, they have to go to the summit and get down as quick as they can. We lost James. He's on. He's in Canada. Oh, you there? All right.
I'm here.
Well, I sent Davi some pictures. Davi, why don't you tell me what you think about the fact that people want to put their national flag at the top of Everest?
I don't get it. Like, unless, like, there's this guy with his Brazilian flag. I see a picture of a guy with an Israeli flag. And I guess it's the same as sort of like sticking the flag in the moon or whatever, except that was actually like a government program. Like, and it was, I don't understand.
Yeah, and it's not something that like hundreds of people do a year.
Yeah, so like why? Like, of all of the things that you could do, like hold up a sign that says "Hi, Mom," or hold up a sign that says "Send Bitcoin here." Like, why?
Well, that's why I think you should get. I think you should get what's the company that MK is working for? I think you should get them to sponsor Airbus. James. Yeah, get them to sponsor James to go to the top and do the first Bitcoin transaction from the top of the world. It's almost to the moon.
Yeah, and I could be the first one to collect Bitcoin for my dead corpse. That would be great. It could be like a fundraiser to get my corpse out of there. How about that?
Like, cold storage, that's what it is.
You could put QR codes. You could put a different QR code on each corpse, and whichever one gets enough money, you'll go up there and bring it down for the family.
There you go.
Do you guys see this picture I sent you, the second email I just sent you that said Lemmings on Everest? It's like a line of 100 people going up Everest at once.
Weird.
On ropes that like the Sherpas put up for them.
So 2% of those guys are going to die, huh? I see at least 8 dead people in this photograph.
Yep, there you go. Some of these people are turning purple, man. Look at the ones in the front. Like the person that's like 8 back and the person that's like 12 back. Their faces are purple from lack of oxygen. But they're still going up.
I
love Everest. I love it because I'll never go there, but it involves oxygen. So I can sit in my chair breathing oxygen, looking at all these pictures going, wow, people are crazy.
I don't get the impulse. Unless you're going to go up there and open a coffee shop or something. I just don't understand why you can do this stuff.
Well, you can drive to base camp, and there are coffee shops at base camp. But I think you should put a cigarette vending machine at base camp. There you go. It takes Bitcoin.
There you go.
Yeah. I don't think you'd get much. I don't think these people smoke. Maybe.
I imagine if you smoke, you couldn't do it. Or if you smoke for any duration of time.
Yeah. Yeah. Did you guys see the other pictures I sent you of all the corpsified bodies? And I think you should take one of those and put a Bipcot flag on it.
I think the guy with the skull head is the one to do.
Yeah, the skull guy.
Rearrange all the colors. So
yeah, the skull guy really looks like a zombie.
Go up there with some spray paint and just recolor them all.
Yeah.
Where is Mount Everest? I don't even know.
It's between Nepal and China. Or Nepal and Tibet, actually. But it's Tibet is China says it's China. But yeah, you can go up. You can deal with different governments. You have a choice. You can deal with the Nepalese government or the Chinese government. Go up one side or the other. But the I think the Nepal side is easier. That's where everyone goes.
Well, that's nice of China and Nepal to let them fly their other flags up there.
Yeah.
Notice I'm not seeing a lot of Nepalese and Chinese flags in these photographs. It's mostly Canadian and American. No.
My friend that married the Sherpa, her Nepalese husband, who was a Sherpa, whose last name was Sherpa, on 9/11 in New York City, like right after that, he just went out and bought like 200 American flags and went out on the street selling them. Like, he didn't care about flags. They don't care about flags. But, you know, he made money. It was good.
Hey, that's the way the market's turning, I guess.
Yep. Green Boots really just looks like he's napping, doesn't he?
Paul Krugman did predict that 9/11 would have economic stimulus. So,
yeah.
There it is.
The sale of flags went up.
So many flags were sold that it actually changed the rotation of the earth. And
so China did well.
Yeah. Yeah. You guys are morbid. Too soon. Yeah.
Take holy pictures, weird, leave only flags. Corpses.
I'm sure the audience has seen these before. They're like strings of sort of red, green, white, blue, yellow, little square flags, and they usually prayer have flags. Like little symbols on them and stuff.
Yeah,
but I think it'd be cool merch. There. There's a place like that in Fremont called Mission Peak, and I went up.
Well, maybe the Sherpas put them up.
Maybe. And they're even on that mountain, which is not very hard to do. People have made little prayer area for some Hindu guy.
Yeah, we're out.
Worms.
Have a good show, you guys. I'm going to take it easy.
All right.
Send me some zombie Bipcot pictures.
You and the hamster in your brain are listening to Freedom Fiends with Michael Dean and his weird friends.
This is the Freedom Fiends, and I am Davy Barker, the Shiny Badger, flying solo here for, maybe a little while. I don't know. Maybe James will come back. But I guess I'm going to be talking about art. Maybe you guys have heard this saying. I think it comes from William Shakespeare, but it might have come from Rumi. I get these sorts of quotes mixed up all the time, but it's nothing is good or evil Fiend until phone. Thinking makes Fiend it phone. So. Who dat? Do we have a James? Seems like we don't. So, on the subject of art, I think this, this good and evil question, nothing is good or evil until thinking makes it so, it's also true for art. Nothing is art until thinking makes so. And sometimes thinking is all it takes. I've been reading about an artist, I don't remember his name, but the movement was called the Ready-Mades. And it's pretty fascinating movement. They essentially said that anything is art, that art is not about craftsmanship, it's about context. And so the famous ready-made work of art is actually a urinal. And so they say, you know, a urinal in a restroom is a you know, piece of equipment, but a urinal in an art gallery, well, that's art. And you don't have to do anything but change the context. You've thought. You've applied thought and value to the thing and made art out of it. And so even a urinal can be art. The ready-mades were interested in...
Fiend phone.
Who dat? James, we have you back? Doesn't sound like it. So, yeah, the ready-made movement was interested in the idea that anything could be found art. And, you know, I think in a sense that that's true. Who goes there? Hello? We have James sort of, you know, out there in meat space somewhere frantically trying to get on the line here, but I'm just going to keep talking until I hear his voice. So, yeah, the idea is that anything can be art if it's found and put in the right context. And when I read about the ready-made movement in college, I started a collection of shiny objects, if you can imagine that. I used to call it exercising my crow brain. And what it meant is when I would walk around and, you know, something would catch my eye on the ground. This is also sort of an exercise in situational awareness, right, or vigilance. I would see something shiny on the ground, like a screw or a, you know, whatever, a tool maybe, or a piece of a broken something, and I would pick it up and I'd put it in my pocket and I'd add it to this collection of shiny things. And it's just like a jar of like you know, like every shop, every machinery shop has the jar of miscellaneous screws. Well, it's sort of like that, only it could be full of any number of things. Like maybe the right Allen wrench is in there, maybe the like perfect piece of metal is in there. And so I think of all of these things, although I've found utility for them before, they're all pieces of art. They're found art. They're junk art, right? And junk art is a cool thing, too. It's kind of like kitsch art. Like, you know, take an old cell phone, smash it with a sledgehammer, and then wire it back together using jewelry wire in a funny kind of a shape.
Fiend phone.
Is that James? The rowdy mud skipper. There you go. Hey, how's it going, man?
Great. Sorry about that. Yeah,
that's all right. You know, we carried on.
Oh, yeah. And I should just let the world know that I'm broadcasting from Prince Edward Island, and the Queen. I think everybody knows the Queen is not a big fan of the Freedom Fiends. Okay, so she's tried to interfere with my signal, but there's a lighthouse here, which I have been able to commandeer, and I am now beaming my signal in digital light pulses to a ship out at sea, which is relaying it back up to the Fiend satellite. So we will not be stopped.
So it's a strobe. That's pretty cool.
Yeah. That's all I could come up with on the fly. So, but it's working. So there you go. Anyway.
All right. It's a pretty clear signal for a lighthouse.
Yeah, well, yeah.
At least you haven't had to resort to smoke signals. I hear you can't get stereo in smoke signals. Could you hear what I was talking about while you were gone, or were you kind of too busy with the lighthouse?
I could hear some of it. I was like, I've got Davi out there, you know.
Have you heard of the ready-made movement? It's an art movement. It's sort of, I guess it comes out of Dada or surrealism, maybe. I'm not really sure, but... it's the idea that any object taken from its native context and put in an art gallery is then art.
Why not, right? Yeah.
Yeah, so the famous ready-made piece is a urinal that was just taken out of the restroom and put into the art gallery and said, look, it's art. And who's to argue with that?
Well, you know, I guess that is a key question, is like, what is art? Right? Like, that's so far over my head. I can't even begin to, I don't know how to answer that question.
Well, you know, the more meaningful question is, what isn't art? Because I think that's a shorter list. Well, when I was in college, I went to art school, and I remember there was an artist, she was a Wiccan, and she used to sell cursed things for a lot of money. Like, you know, like you just take like a chair and you paint it black. And you call it cursed chair. And she would tell people who would come to her shows, yeah, you know, I'm a witch, and I cursed that chair. And the like novelty of that or the intrigue of that made it valuable art to some people.
I fully support that. I think that's wonderful. And if people are willing to buy that, I think then it's definitely art. I don't know. You know, Steve Jobs has, there's a quote from Steve Jobs, and I'm not
maybe
sure exactly
even
what.
Arts and crafts.
Sure. arts and black witchcraft. Yeah. But Steve Jobs said, real artists ship. And I don't know exactly what the context was. This was back when like Apple had its pirate room, and like people were working on this like really cool thing. It was going to be an Apple computer, and it was going to be different and stuff. But he said real artists ship, and I have no idea what he meant, but I've always thought it's like, you know, if you're shipping a product, meaning really if you have a buyer and you're delivering that product, and you're calling it art, you know, then I guess it's, then you can be an artist, right? But if you make this like, you know, if you're painting in the basement and nobody's ever seeing or having an opportunity to buy your painting, then, you know, are you an artist? I don't know.
Yeah, why not? You just don't have an audience. It doesn't mean, it means you're probably not a good artist.
Or maybe it's just a urinal in the gallery, you know? I don't know.
Well, anyway. I mean, a lot of art isn't for sale. Like, that's not always the point. Like, I did a lot of art that was sort of situational. It was meant to be kind of found art. Like, I did, when I was in a ceramics class, I made a scale, like, exact replica of a keyboard, except that I, like, split it open, and I glazed it in such a way that it looked, like, melted and burned, right?
Okay.
And then you just swap it out with a keyboard, like, in the library or something like that. And the next person that comes up to that terminal is like, what the heck? Like, it's like, was there a fire? Like, what is going on here? And, you know, cool. Like, it wasn't for sale, but it was right. To be experienced.
It was to be consumed as art, right? There's still an audience, and there's still an act, I think, of consuming that art, right? So,
yeah.
So I think that definitely, obviously, that counts as art from almost any perspective. But I still think that would fit into the real artist
performance
ship.
Art.
Yeah, because you're actually shipping a product there of that performance. So
maybe
pretty cool though. I like that idea. It's
I always like the idea of art as activism or art. Like I did a lot of performance art, and a lot of like collage work, sort of like public art, like guerrilla art. You know what I mean?
Uh-huh.
And, you know, a lot of that didn't sell. Occasionally, some of it did. But, like, my senior project, when I graduated, I did, instead of having a gallery, I had an art burn. And I set out flyers that said, hey, you know, my entire college portfolio is up for auction. Come by the house and have a look. Whatever doesn't sell burns.
I love and, that. Yeah, I think that's a great idea.
It was a nice way to sort of, you know, lose some weight before I left college and, you know, trim down the personal possessions. It was also, it created some urgency for people that wanted the stuff. And it was also a message. I'm really against archival art. I don't like the idea that art lives forever because life doesn't live forever. And so I like the idea that it was a statement about art being temporary. Because even like, you know, like the oldest art we have is like the Lascaux Caves, right? Which is a cave in France where there's like pictures of bison on the wall.
It's like 30,000 years old, I think.
Yeah, that sounds about right. But you know what? Someday the Earth is going to careen into the sun, or the sun is going to careen into the Earth, or we're all going to go into a black hole. Like the sun will reach, what is it called? Heat death, star death, cold death. What is it called when a star dies? Anyway, the
depends
point
on
is
the, size of
the most
star.
Permanent. The most permanent art we have on the planet is still temporary. So the idea that you're going to use archival materials and art can last forever, you're just deluding yourself. It'll outlive you, but it's not permanent.
But you know, we also now, I mean, if mankind can exist, then the art might be able to exist as well in a digital form. So like people keep getting, like I keep getting new hard drives and I keep copying over that data. And
is it going to survive the heat death of the sun?
Well, it depends on where I'm living. Maybe I'll be in outer space. Who knows? You know, the Freedom Fiends is being beamed to Alpha Centauri right now. Like it'll
That's
be
a fair point. Yeah, network, you know, effect throughout the galaxy, maybe.
Why not? Right? Like maybe even like historians will have mastered faster than light travel, but they'll be like, okay, now let's go that direction and go catch those radio waves from the 50s, right? Like try to get out in front of it and wait for the radio waves to actually hear what people were saying back then.
That would be neat.
Yeah, why not?
So are the Lascaux Caves art? If a person is drawing a bison on the wall so that he can target practice with a spear, is that art?
Sure. Well, is it being consumed by an art audience? And I'd say absolutely. So maybe the artist doesn't even have to intend it to be art, if it, you know, for it to become art.
Well, yeah, because someone else might find it and put it in a gallery.
Right, or the pictures of it. I mean, and those images are striking.
Literally. Yeah, I don't know. I kind of think art is also a lie. Worms.
You're listening to Freedom Fiends with Michael Dean and his weird friends, tasing you with liberty since 2011. Learn more at freedomfiends.com.
This is the Freedom Fiends. So I've got, I don't know if you heard this, but this is sort of my slogan for the art class that I'm teaching. I started teaching today. And it is, nothing is art until thinking makes it so.
Okay. That's still kind of vague.
It's entirely vague, which is why it's perfect for fifth graders.
Okay.
But it comes from Shakespeare. Shakespeare said, nothing is good or evil until thinking makes it so. But really what I'm getting at is it's the observer effect, right? Like, the thing is not really art until you ask the question, is it art? And somebody says yes. And then immediately it is art. Like, as soon as
Fair
somebody
enough.
Says, whether it was the creator of the thing or the observer of the thing, the
what if they said, nope,
makes it
nope,
art.
It's not art. Nope, sorry. Nope.
Well, if that's universal, if like... you know, if whatever, somebody leaves a pile of steaming something on Mount Everest and nobody, if a tree poops in the woods, I don't know. Like, if nobody ever calls it art, then I don't think it is.
Interesting. And well, okay, but it could be 30,000 years later, somebody calls it art, and then it becomes art at that point.
Yeah, it's found it's like, art. It's ready-made art.
It exists in a state of limbo, like Schrodinger's cat.
Art.
Yeah, Schrodinger's art until somebody observes it and says, yeah, okay, art, sure.
Yeah.
But, you know, something I wanted to talk to you about, you know, since we're on the topic of art, you know, I see a lot of Liberty art projects, and I think they're, some of them are really, really cool. I was just thinking to myself, like, how many, you know, like how important art is to any cultural shift. And, you know, we look at these big social movements of the past, and there's always this, like, a musical soundtrack, right? It's ready for, you know, they had so many bands and art movements and plays and novels, and I was just trying to look like, well, what do we have? You know, we have Davy Barker, author of Survivor Max, right?
Yeah, I do some more conventional visual art. But yeah, I mean, writing a novel is art. Doing a radio show is art. But is it like impactful the way you know, protest art of the past has been. I'm not sure.
Well, you know, what about, you know, I think there's like two different categories. There's like, for instance, Jordan Page, for instance, like great guy, super musician. I see him, you know, he's sort of like performing songs that sort of rally the troops. You know, he's at our events, he's doing our shows, he's like providing music for us, right? But I don't know how far he gets out into the you know, quote unquote real world. It'd be great if he was like, you know, on tour opening up for like major artists or something, right? Then that would be something different, where he's taking it out there. And I think some artists are doing a good job of that. Look at, and it's probably going to be very much more subtle when they do it, when they're getting it out there in films, getting it out there in other kinds of artwork or novels or plays.
Well, there was, in 2008, there was a musician named Amy Allen who was more of a sort of mainstream musician, had videos on MTV and stuff, and
sure.
She did the Ron Paul anthem, right?
Yeah.
Which is, it was pretty cool, I thought. I still, you know, it hits me in all the places music should hit me, so a little more
and
mainstream.
She was super nice. She came to Philly to, she was one of the performers at our FedStock show. It was a, and the Fed as a musical concert.
Yeah.
And she was super nice. She's super nice and extremely talented. How about Doug Stanhope, right?
Yeah. Yeah, comedy for sure. Lots of libertarian themes in comedy.
Worms.
Worms. Broadcasting from deep inside Trump caverns, where, with the proper proctoscopic equipment, you may even examine America's wealthiest prostate cancer. This is an official trigger warning. We may be discussing liberal guilt, prescription drugs, non-prescription drugs, the menses of glossy Fox News anchorettes, and a variety of other wretch-inducing philosophical smut sure to test your testicular fortitude. And I'm your host, Jimmy Russell, here with Rowdy Mudskipper himself, James Babb. So press your face against the speakers and keep your arms and legs inside the show at all times, because it's gonna be a bumpy ride. Hey, James, how's it going?
Oh, it's going great, Jimmy Russell. Thanks for that in-depth trigger warning.
Well, you know, I just want people to be aware that Jimmy Russell rustles some jimmies.
Are you feeling it? Are you feeling it? Are your jimmies rustled?
I'm feeling my jimmies right now, James. And how are your jimmies doing? Is it Jimmy short for James? Does James have some rustled jimmies?
Well, you know, it's pretty hard to rustle James's jimmies, but sometimes sometimes they can. I've been on vacation, so my James's jimmy rustling is minimized these days. So
I don't think I can do this. So you've just met Jimmy Russell. Who I'm going to keep working on Jimmy Russell. He may replace me as host of or co-host of The Fiends here, but that's just the voice I like to do.
Yeah, keep working on the voice. I think the character's got a lot of potential. So
yeah, I like him. He's fun. You know what I got to do? I got to find the exact amount, like, where is the line of stuff you're allowed to say and not allowed to say? Because I think as a character, Jimmy, and this is again about art, Jimmy Russell is a work of art.
And, right.
He should be aloof in his offensiveness.
Okay.
Like, what? I don't understand why anyone's upset by that.
Yeah, and you know, and there's only one way to find out where the boundary is, and that's to cross it.
to upset people.
Right. Sorry, Michael W. Dean, it's, you know, but it's going to be you two, okay? It's for art, okay? So, you know.
So we're going to be hearing more from Jimmy Russell as we develop him. And, you know, his original name was Lance Boyle. But I think Jimmy Russell's a better name.
Yeah.
Because, you know, you cannot trust a man with two first names.
That's what happened to Ron Paul, right?
Yeah.
Ron Paul, Rand Paul, Ayn Rand.
Yeah, exactly.
So yeah, Liberty Art. I'd like to see more street art, like plays, like what do they call it? Crowd, mass crowd, whatever. You know, those things where like people break into dance in some bus station somewhere.
Yeah.
I forget what those are called. It's like spontaneous something.
Yeah, they make really good videos, but I don't know, it's like, yeah, where like one person starts playing the flute or a banjo or something. Next thing you know, there's a whole orchestra there. And then sometimes people use them to just like show up and like rob a store the same way. Like,
yeah. That's like not just quite the liberty activism I'm interested in.
Yeah.
But I see the appeal.
Yeah. But did you see, you know, there's at Porkfest, this past Porkfest, Robert Anthony Peters did some test readings of a play he's working on about the trial of William Penn. And I thought this was very interesting. His target audience is going to be like high school theaters, okay? So he's going to have them performing this play, ideally, right? Spreading the message of jury nullification, because if people don't know, William Penn went on trial for speaking to a group of Quakers without permission, and there was quite a bit of drama.
Permission, man, that's a serious offense right there.
Yeah. So, but that was the crime, and the jury said, we're not going to convict. Even though, he pretty much admitted to doing it, but we're not going to convict because that law is kind of stupid. So, anyway, I like the way this is, you know, it's sort of insidious. It's not like, you know, what I don't like is the format of like Christian rock. You know, it's like you're not going to win Christians over with Christian rock because they accidentally hear it like at a Metallica show, right?
You know, when I was it must have been middle school. It was probably that long ago. I used to listen to a band called called Violet Burning. And I thought they were love songs. And me and my like emo middle school self was like, these are such great love songs. They make me sad. And like, I find out later they're all about Jesus.
Oh, no.
So that's something that happens.
See, now that's an example of it retroactively not becoming art. It was art previously.
It was art.
until you found out what it's about, and then it stopped being art retroactively. Yeah.
Yeah. And there you go.
Actually, you know, songs, I mean, gosh, religion has had, you know, some incredible art that's been inspired or financed by religions. So we shouldn't make fun of it too hard, because that is a, you know, religions have certainly got on this tip, right? Of like, hey, we want people to come to our, you know, to our thing, and we want them to give us money, and we've got parties and stuff we want them to get on board with. Having some cool tunes was a way to do that. So,
yeah,
you know, we need more cool tunes in, you know, in the liberty, quote unquote, movement. So,
well, don't forget all of the good blasphemy art out there too.
Like, give me some examples.
Well, I mean, my personal, one of my favorite pieces of art is Salvador Dali was one of the first people to do an offensive Muhammad cartoon. And he did a surrealist artist's depiction of Muhammad as he appears in Dante's Inferno. I don't know if you know this, Muhammad the prophet is in Dante's Inferno. Dante puts him in the sort of like highest realm of hell that's reserved for the righteous pagans. And that was actually a compliment at the time. Like, the intention of both Dante and Dali was to compliment the prophet by depicting him in hell. And that's a nuance maybe a lot of fundamentalists won't understand, but that's part of why it's my one of my favorite paintings.
Interesting. That is very
because you can't say he's in heaven. Like, if you're a Christian fundamentalist, you can't say like the prophet of another religion is in heaven. And so the best that Dante could give him was to be among the righteous pagans. Which is, I love how complex it is.
You know, I just pulled up, searched for it. It's Muhammad's Dream. Is that's the painting we're talking about from 1963?
Oh, hang on. Let me see if this is it.
It's pretty wild. You know, more visual entertainment for the radio, but yeah, I'm calling that art.
Yeah,
absolutely.
It's sort of like a disemboweled figure with like a spear through his head and a slingshot on his foot. Is that what you're looking at?
Maybe I'm looking at something else, because this is pretty, it's fairly abstract.
Well, that's Dali for you.
It's not like, you know, it's not like melting clocks or something.
So what would you do for liberty art? Like, because here's the obvious analogy to like blasphemy art is anti-state art, right? Like the burning of a flag is arguably blasphemous anti-state art. Right?
Yeah, but that's a snoozer, you know.
It's been done.
Right? Yeah, we mentioned Doug Stanhope briefly before one of the breaks, and I think he is probably, you know, probably the most effective at communicating messages of liberty in a hilarious way that is totally entertaining to audiences that are not, you know, sort of the choir, right? I think he's doing a marvelous job of, I mean, first of all, he's just drop dead hilarious. Have you ever been to one of his shows?
No, but I've seen some on YouTube.
After one of his shows, literally, like, my gut was just in pain for like days from just laughing so hard. It's just, the guy's relentless. How about Penn Jillette? Did you ever see his disappearing flag act?
No. I did. I saw Penn and Teller live in Las Vegas when I was there.
One of the things he does, they actually did this on the West Wing, okay? It's where he apparently incinerates a flag, right?
Okay.
And it's like, oh, this is so, people are like, oh my goodness, oh, you know, but it's a magic act, and the flag reappears, but like, I guess there's sort of a message to it, and I can't remember exactly how it goes, but the idea is that you know, the flag disappears, but you know, the freedom of expression remains, or something. And you know, it's kind of like a sort of a deeper message, you know, about like not getting wrapped up in these symbols. And but you know, he's,
I like that.
He's a pretty good libertarian, and he's slipping that into mainstream audiences, especially like on the West Wing. Can't get much more mainstream than that.
Yeah, I always like burning money as a kind of art. I used to burn money as a way to break the ice to talk about the Federal Reserve with people.
And I think it's a crime, right? So, cool.
It is a crime. It costs you a dollar, but, you know, so does most liberty outreach material. It costs you something, so...
About a buck.
You know?
Yeah.
I used to tell people, you know, like, you know, the dollar used to be backed by gold and silver, and then for a while it wasn't backed by anything. But now, thanks to this magic trick I'm going to show you, it's backed by the entertainment value of watching it burn.
Nice.
So, you know, there is an intrinsic value, you know, and it is entertaining. It is well worth a dollar. At least once, burn a dollar in front of a statist and look at the look on their face. The look on their face is worth a dollar, trust me.
Yeah, well, it's back. It's backed by lulls now.
Yeah, it's backed by lulls.
That's, yeah, why not? Not even Bitcoin is backed by lulls.
No, Dogecoin is, though.
True.
Worms.
You're listening to Freedom Fiends. Go to freedomfiends.com to help keep it drone-proof.
Freedom Fiends. Welcome back. I'm with Dobby Barker. I'm James Babb, and we are isolating and supporting your liberty sacrum. Great to be with you, Dobby.
What's my liberty sacrum?
It's something that needs isolating and supporting. So, there you go.
Okay.
Yeah, it's that special triangular bone.
Ah.
Anyway, it's right. It's adjacent to the fiend bone.
Okay. I'm a fan of the fiend bone.
So, you know, we were talking about some interesting Liberty art projects. A friend of mine is started one recently. He's doing a graphic novel, and I think this is a great format. And it's called James versus the New World Order. And when he first told me about it, I assumed it was about me, but no, it's not. But it's a great story. Folks can check it out. It's it's James versus the New World Order .com, and he's got art samples up there. And what I like about this is it's going to be geared towards a comic book market. It's not a comic book for the liberty market. It's very insidious. It's got some insidious themes about a character who goes up against these like underworld villains and whatnot. Did you see the Silver Circle movie? Do you remember that?
I did. Yeah, I used to do marketing for them.
Okay, now those guys. Well, you probably know more about it than you could tell us. But I was always impressed with the way they were marketing that film at like comic book conventions and, you know, taking it to these big audiences. So how did that work out?
It worked really well. You know, it's like every other Liberty project. There are flaws and there are successes. And the real success was you're at a comic book convention, you're promoting the film, you've got your sort of spread out on your table, but they also made custom Silver Circle silver ounces and 10th ounce rounds that had the like rebel emblem on them. So you had these like kids at these comic book conventions who'd never thought about silver or never had a piece of silver in their hand or anything. Man, what the heck is going on? That's a low flying plane. I'm getting droned.
Talking
about silver.
No.
You know, and you got to do the drop, you know, like the Liberty Dollar drop where you plop the ounce in their hand. You got to do this with like little kids who are there for comic books and they've never thought about silver in their life. And so that was cool. But plot-wise, I mean, the dialogue was a little heavy-handed. It wasn't as insidious as I wished it had been. It sort of came off like you were being preached at times.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, and it also I think it took so long to make that it started out being like a near future story and kind of ended up a historical documentary.
They had to change the prices. They had all these like inflated prices in the first draft, and by the time the thing was done, we'd already had higher prices.
But you know, maybe I love the concept. I thought the story was great in that film, by the way. I thought it was good, and I really like the effort that went into it. I'd like to see.
I'm really
like
hoping they do more.
Like
well, I think there should be more Silver Circle. We should see the rebels do something else because, like a lot of the work to do a fully CGI movie like that is all of the like vectorizing and rendering and creation of the skeletal structure and the skins of the characters. So now that you've got that, You can make them do anything, right? So there's no real reason not to use all of that sort of stored capital to tell other stories.
But, you know, maybe the feature film is a tough, you know, that's a tough format because you have to have all of that stuff rendered and edited, you know, maybe like shorter episodes, you know, like 20-minute episodes that could be distributed via Netflix or iTunes or something like, you know, and then you get some out there finished, generate hype to get the next ones going, right?
I always thought the coolest thing to do with them would be, so the movie was motion capture, right? So you have actors play out the role, and that's very time consuming and expensive, but plenty of kids shows are CGI and they're not motion capture. They're just sort of crude movement. So I always thought if you took these characters and you just orchestrated like short episodes and you did it like G.I. Joe, right? Where it's like rebels versus feds. Every episode is a different liberty issue and they all charge at each other. They shoot. Everybody misses. Somebody retreats. It's an action show where nobody's ever in any real danger. And then at the end, you have a like knowing is half the battle style, like libertarian lesson, like economics 101 from the rebels, right?
If it was subtle, you know, I think it's got to be sort of insidious.
Yeah, it could be subtle. Worms.
You're listening to Freedom Fiends. So much truth, it hurts.
Welcome back.
How's it going?
It's going great.
Groovy. I don't remember what we were talking about. Where did we leave off?
Yeah, I lost my track. I was filling out my profile on the new tactical dating site. So,
tactical dating. I heard paranormal dating. I didn't hear.
It's the latest. It's the latest. Site. Yeah, it's the first tactical dating site. So,
dating in full situational awareness. Is that what it is?
Oh man,
13 like romantic things you can do with a paperclip and a box of matches.
That's terrible. That's brilliant. Yeah.
See, here's the thing. If I was going to go to a paranormal dating site, I'm fascinated by this commercial. Like, I'm not bad-mouthing this commercial. I think it's neat that you would get that dating sites have evolved to the point that it's this specific.
Yeah.
But I want to know if you can go to a paranormal dating site and meet a paranormal person. Like, are there ghosts? Are there aliens? Is there crypto bestiality going on? Like, what if I want to meet a spirit?
Well, first ask your wife if that's okay, and then you can go to this, fill out a profile.
Yeah, I'm a married man. I can never explore the wonder which is paranormal dating or tactical dating.
Well, so would it be cheating if it's with a ghost? I mean,
I don't know.
I think you might have other issues if that question actually came up in a serious context.
Yeah. Well, the ghost of who is the question?
Yeah. Right.
I mean, what if you're a widower and you are married to the ghost? It's like a previous marriage. Does that happen?
And what about like same-sex ghosts? Is that cool?
Same-sex. Do you remember the original Ghostbusters, the first Ghostbusters?
Sure.
There's a scene when they're getting popular and like business is booming and everything's going well, where it's Dan Aykroyd like lying in a bed and then suddenly like his belt and pants start coming off like by themselves, and then he makes a like a face, like something is happening. And I did not understand what was going on in that scene when I was a kid. Like, it went all, it totally over my head. Had no clue what was going on. But now, as an adult, I'm like, I get it. He's like a celebrity. He's got groupies in the spirit world, right? Like,
yeah. Maybe he went to paranormaldate.com. I mean, it's maybe. Possible. Yeah.
It's a weird notion for the writers to throw in. I don't know how.
It's kind of a kid's movie, too, right? I mean, it's...
It is a kid's movie.
Yeah.
Great message about the EPA in that movie, though. Do you remember the guy from the EPA in Ghostbusters? I mean, like... He's the guy that's like, this is obviously in violation of some rules that I'm not even, I can't recite them and don't know what they are, but it looks big and scary, so shut it off.
Yeah.
It's like, it's the EPA's fault that all the ghosts get out.
Right. You know, it's like, maybe it was almost like foreshadowing to what the EPA did to that poor river in Colorado.
Oh, right? Man.
Where they just... Where they're like, let's go protect this river really, really hard.
Yeah. I don't know why more people aren't upset.
At releasing the ghosts or polluting that river?
Well, both.
Yeah. Yeah, I think one of the articles I read, it said, lead content in the river is 3,500 times normal. 3,500. Like, and that's you know, that's drinking water, that's fishing water, swimming. I mean,
anymore.
It's awful. And did anybody even lose their job, do you think?
No, I haven't even seen anybody like get in front of a podium and apologize. Like, that, no, nothing happens. Like, some people take some pictures of an orange river, and like some bureaucrat somewhere is like hanging out in the break room and taking all his sick days, and that's it. Like,
yeah. Well, and the first headlines I saw over that story didn't even say anything about the EPA doing it. It's just like mine water runoff pollutes river, you know, like, and I'm sure it was like, oh, those miners, gosh, if we only had an EPA to regulate them, this wouldn't happen.
You know, the other neat thing about the Ghostbusters is that it's a privately run outfit with a siren. Like, they're in a fire department. They have a pole. They have an emergency number. They're walking around with, like, nuclear devices on their back that could destroy the whole city and break the space-time continuum. And it's like, yeah, we don't have any licenses or permits or anything. Like, the government doesn't even really acknowledge that we exist. So we just went ahead and did it without asking permission.
Yeah. See, now that's the insidious libertarian message that I'm looking for in the mainstream. But do you think people picked up on that message? Do they retain that? And they're like, yeah, we shouldn't have government emergency services. Yeah.
I don't know. I mean, if they ever do a Ghostbusters remake, it'll probably be secretly funded by the military, and they'll be like driving around in like a Ghostbuster Hummer or something.
So aren't there? Isn't there a new one? I thought there was a new one where the Ghostbusters are women.
Oh, I did. I remember hearing something about that. Well, I'm gonna watch it with a skeptical eye and see if they don't, you know, make it a movie about, you know, filleting the state. So.
Yeah, that's a little too much freedom in that first one, evidently.
Yeah. I mean, this is sort of what they do with movies now. Like, a lot of movies come out now, and they're just like, we're going to showcase all the best military hardware. Look how great the military is. Like, even, like, Superman was full of, like, military worship.
Superman?
Yeah, some of the most recent ones, it's all about whatever. Like, they're just they play this role that they don't play in the comic book, you know what I mean? And so you see all the hardware, and I mean, I guess it is ultimately that they're not competent for the task at hand, but they're there as, like, you know, assisting whatever, backup.
Right. And if you're on the same team as Superman, then, you know, obviously you're the good guy. I think that's the message. Well, do you remember Top Gun? What an incredible recruitment tool that was. That was basically like recruited more people for the military than like any ad campaign ever.
I never saw Top Gun. I just rode the roller coaster.
it showed you how cool it was to be a fighter pilot. Everyone's like, yeah, I want to, you know, and I'm sure all the kids are lining up like, yeah, I want to be a fighter pilot, like Tom Cruise, Top Gun, you know, and they're like, first you start with potatoes. This is how you peel them. So you're going to work your way up to fighter pilot. Don't worry. Don't worry. So you just peel potatoes. We'll get you there someday. Yeah.
Weird.
But, yeah, what else is the military? And I mean, military loves entertainment. They love to get their product placements in. I mean,
Transformers.
NFL.
A lot of military stuff in Transformers.
They do like
NFL.
They do flyovers at the games. You
know? Really?
Yeah. You're like, I hope that's friendly, you know? Okay, we're being strafed by F-14s or something.
Weird. I don't like it. They should all go home.
I went to drag races, and like, oh, the Army has their own drag race cars. They're like, oh, yeah. They're like,
what is that, like boy cars dressed up like girl cars? What is that?
Something like that, yeah.
I would go to that. I would go to a drag race if it meant like drag queens like racing in heels. That'd be great.
Yeah, what would they be driving? Or
no, they don't drive. It's just drag queens racing like a foot race.
Oh, in heels.
It's a drag race. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Although, I don't know, these Top Fuel dragsters are pretty cool. Maybe if there's a way to combine both into a single show would be a big hit. But and, you know,
Is drag racing a car sport where the cars crash into each other? Because I like that.
It's not supposed to be that way. They do go like over 300 miles an hour though. So, and it's so loud it like just rustles all your jimmies, you know.
We're not all hoping that they crash, but we're all hoping that they crash. Is it that kind of thing?
I don't think anybody's really hoping to see them crash. I think you're thinking of NASCAR, right?
Maybe. No, I'm
NASCAR. They have the big pileups.
There's like a sport where you like you get a car and you outfit it with like the front of like a tractor or something and you crash them into things.
Demolition derbies, yeah.
There you go. That's what I want to go to. That's not really a race though, is it? That's more like a wrestling match.
Well, it's more like roller derby, I think. with cars, I don't know. I remember the Fonz. The Fonz was into it. Remember the Fonz? You're too young.
I remember
you're too
the
young
Fonz.
For Happy Days.
No, I watched some of the Happy Days. I watched I watched VHS tapes of old television when I was a kid. So I'm like a generation behind where I should be as far as television.
Catching up.
Yeah. So how did we get on race cars? Oh, we were talking about military. Yeah, what's the military do to recruit?
Product placement at drag shows. And well, and now with, I don't know, can you be gay in the military now? Not that drag people are necessarily gay, but I forget.
Yeah, I think you can.
Can you? So maybe that would be a good place to recruit. I don't know.
Hmm.
And is it art, right?
Is it art?
Would it be art if there was a military flyover at a drag show? Yeah. Yeah.
I guess it is. I mean, like,
well, we just asked the question.
Still art.
We just asked the question, so it became art.
I mean, there's the National Endowment for the Arts. So if we're ruling out government-funded art, that's most art. Probably not most art, but it's enough.
I think it's great that we have politicians.
You're listening to the Freedom Fiends, and I'm beaming these words into your cerebellum.
We'll be right back. Dobby Barker. I'm James Babb. This is our final segment of this show. Talking about art and what is art, which is it's a pretty big topic. And why do our enemies use art so well? I think that's what I'd like to find out. Dobby, why do the enemies of freedom use art?
Because they're funded by the enemies of freedom.
Why do they fund art? Why does the government fund art, right? Like, I'm sure there's no was there a constitutional amendment that said there shall be weird art that other people won't pay for?
No, but, you know, that way the artists aren't doing their anti-government stuff. They're doing their, you know, probably not pro-government, but probably government-neutral stuff. And, you know, the first thing you want to do is you want to be in control of the writers and the artists, because the pictures right. and the words that politicians use to control people are given meaning by the writers and artists.
Right. And I mean, don't they even, like, they have, like, the White House has their own poet and stuff like that, don't they?
Yeah, that has always weirded me out. And it's never a very good poet. Like, it's just...
That must just get the poetry crowd all warm and fuzzy about the president, right? Oh, he's talking poetry again. Oh, we love the president, even though he's a liar, a socialist, and his feet stink.
It goes all the way back to some extent. I mean, like, if you want to look at, like, the controlling apparatus of ancient Egypt, like, those temples were all built by artists to glorify the pharaoh, right?
Right.
And then, like, the same thing with, you know, every medieval tyrant had his portrait. And,
yeah, but that's, you know, like, I guess that's sort of self-aggrandizing things. You know, I understand. Building monuments to them. Building,
well, you know,
portraits.
There's, you know, the Midnight Ride of Paul Revere, right? There's this song or poem or whatever about, like, this is sort of part of American history, freedom, whatever, and it's kind of a lie. Like, Paul Revere didn't do most of the Midnight Run. Most of the Midnight Run was done by a guy named Israel Bissell, but, like, that doesn't rhyme with anything. So, like, I mean, like, all of this is propaganda. The portraits you see of George Washington, who knows if that's really what the guy looked like? You know, like, he could just sort of say, hey, can you paint out this big, ugly mole I have on my left eye? Like, or whatever. Or the stories that they tell about these presidents about never cutting right. down a cherry tree or whatever. I did not have sex with that slave woman. And,
you know what I think would be cool is if the president, when he appeared, he had his own, like, orchestra, kind of like David Letterman's orchestra or Jay Leno. Like, they have, like, and like, there's theme music that plays when they come out on stage. Like, he has his own little, like, troubadours or little, like, a bard that might follow around and sing songs about him. Like
Brave Sir Robin.
And then he ran away. He ran away.
Yeah. That would be pretty funny. That's worth an auto-tune and a Photoshop right there. If you could get like a Donald Trump pounding his podium, and then behind him you Photoshop in the minstrel behind Sir Robin, and you make some funny little song to go with it.
Or I mean, I might just have a lot more respect for the process if, like, it's time for the, you know, okay, it's the inaugural address, you know, it's the State of the Union. But first, these jugglers, you know?
Yeah. Why not?
I mean, it is a circus, isn't it? Like, it's just not that entertaining as is. Why not spice it up?
It's,
you know,
the circus where you vote for bread. So go out and do some art, I guess. I mean, like...
Yeah. And, you know, and go ahead and get... You know what would be funny? Get that stupid grant from National Endowment of the Arts and make some totally insidious anti-government art with it just to see what happens.
You know what? Make some anti-endowment for the arts art with the National Endowment for the Arts money. That would be meta.
That would be art.
Beautiful.
That would be art itself.
I may have to try this. Where do I apply for this grant? Do they need to know who I am? Do I have to show ID?
I'm sure they have to check out your Facebook friends and whatnot before they give it to you.
You mean I can't just go to the government and hold my hand out and get money?
Well, I guess if you're a banker, you can. So